It's the Morning Tailgate. Vinny Vincent Clay. Follow us on X at Vince Sapienza, at Vinny Bonsignor, at Clay Baker Radio. Hit us up on the text line.
So call you think it's up. For sure?
702-365-9200. What is that?
I can't wait to answer. You think it's for sure that in a similar situation, Antonio's going to go for it the next time?
100%.
I don't know.
100%.
I don't know about. I don't know. I think he's somebody that.
In a world full of non guarantees, I guarantee it.
Yeah, I don't know that. I think he's. It depends, and we're talking about if he faces another fourth, and if he faces the exact same situation. Not to say that there's going to be an exact same situation.
He's going for it.
I would think that he would. I probably would. But I also know Antonio thus far in covering him to be somebody that I think he's going to look at the game. He's going to look at, do I have confidence that my offensive line is going to get that necessary push in this situation? What's been happening earlier in the game? Has their defensive line been kicking my offensive line's ass all game, which they kind of were in that game on Sunday? The Chargers defensive line was kicking the Raiders' ass up front. I think he's going to take all of that into account and make a decision not based on this overall big number of analytics that's out there.
I'm not even talking analytics.
I
know analytics says to go for it. I'm not saying he goes for it because of analytics. I'm saying because at the end of the day, your offense has not been on that side of the field.
I agree. Yeah.
And mm-hmm. you can kick the ball and play defense. You still need to score at some point. Mm-hmm. You still need to line up again on offense and prove that you can push the other team back. So what I'm saying is, why are you going to wait for the next opportunity when you can do it right now?
But that's why
a confidence booster that would be, because to me, it would inject more confidence in your team at that moment than the amount of deflating of confidence it does for your offense by saying, we can't get a yard, we need to boot it.
But that's why I'm saying, well, first of all, to say that there's going to be an exact same moment, that's why I'm saying for him, it'll come down to how has that game played out to that point. Like if it's in the fourth quarter and again, their defensive line has been kicking my offensive line's butt and my defense has been dominating and I feel comfortable that if we punt it here with 7 minutes left in the game, we're going to get it back and get another chance to go down there and score the touchdown. I think that he would do the same thing. And I think whether, you know, right or wrong, I think he's somebody of conviction.
I agree,
and I think that he's going to go based on the game, and go based on the flow of that particular game, how that game is playing out, rather than everything, all the analytics, all the statistics say you should go for it right here.
But agree.
So I don't know that it's guaranteed.
I think it's a guarantee. I just think it's a guarantee because you're not going to get the exact same circumstances. We know that. But if you're talking about the same kind of setup, you're down six at that point. And With 7 minutes left, you still have to go score a touchdown. You still have to go do something you haven't done all game. So you haven't been able to run the ball the way you wanted all game. Well, you haven't been able to get in the red zone all game. And this is as close as you've been up until that point. You need to go and do it. Yeah. I mean, at some point, you have to inject the confidence in your team despite what the results would have been in the first and second quarter. Because if you can't do it then, what makes you think you're going to do it later?
But this goes back to it's not going to be the – that's why I'm saying it's going to come down to the game. What if it's 31-26 and you have been scoring, you have been moving the ball – But you haven't been good maybe necessarily on those short yarded situations. So that's why I'm saying not everything's going to be equal. No. If it's a similar situation.
Well, that's not a similar situation.
The situation being it's one score, you're on the other side of the field, it's fourth and one.
But
you have, like, that's why I'm saying he's going to go on what has been happening in that game. What do I feel comfortable
with? If you're telling me it's a 31-26 game, obviously I completely agree with you. Like that obviously changes, but that's not similar to a low scoring game where, you know,
said anything about low scoring game.
You just said a similar
game.
When
we say 2016, we don't say low scoring game. When we say that the last time this has happened was in 2016, no one's ever said that, but of course it has to be a low scoring game. So similar situation.
Okay.
I mean a one score game. Doesn't matter if it's 50-49, whatever.
Well, that is because that's very dissimilar.
That's why I'm saying it'll come down to the game situation.
In terms of
Like, you're just saying in four, you're saying in a one-score
game. Yeah, but
game,
I was going off the preface on a similar situation where this is happening. Your running game is not going. Your offense is not going.
Then that's,
if that,
that's
if he is presented with the same situation in a similar game.
Okay, in a similar game. You didn't say that. You didn't say similar game.
Then he's definitely going for it. But if you're saying it's this high-scoring game, of course that changes because
that's, because the offense is working. It's getting
first
downs.
That's why I'm saying it's going to be what's that game look like. That's why I said that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's what I'm saying. When you said similar game. I just meant similar situation,
just the fourth and one. Yeah,
it's semantics, but that creates a big difference. Yeah, so I agree with you.
That's the key difference.
7 minutes to go. It's 16-10. You have to get 1 yard. Eventually, he's
going
to have to start.
I'm going for it, and he should go for it.
He's got to make sure that he stands by the words of impose your will. We want this offensive line to impose their will. You just got to get 1 yard. It's a matter of life or death right now. You have to go and have some sort of confidence that you can get 1 yard. That's all it comes down to.
And basically what I'm saying is let's just say that exact situation, score, everything that's happened, comes over to week two, and he's faced with a similar, to me, I would guarantee he goes for it as opposed to kicks it.
Yes.
That's me. That's my opinion. Well, I have nothing else. I know he doubled down and by sticking with the defense yesterday. He talked about it, and as you said, he's a man of conviction. I'm just telling you, if he's presented with that exact same thing, he's 100% going for it.
What he said, basically, without saying, is that I had no confidence that we were going to get that yard right there, and we were going to give them the ball at the 43, which means 10 yards away or maybe 15 yards away from kicking a field goal to make it a two-score game. That's what he didn't feel comfortable about. What, right or wrong, whether you agree with it or not,
he called it a long one. He called it a long.
We didn't feel like they were going to be able to get that.
He
push.
Said we thought about it, but if you're thinking about it, that, because that's going to be one of those other things, right? That's got to be a feel too. If you sit there and you're, it's a long one, and his first thought is, I don't know.
We haven't been all game.
But that's what I mean. If it's an I don't know, but even if you haven't been all
throw
game,
it then.
You could sit there and be like,
throw the ball.
Well, the offense looks different in this quarter, you know. We kind of got some juice to us. They still didn't have the juice. So that's why he's sitting there like
I don't here's know. The other part. He also didn't have forget just put getting the push up front to get a to get the yard in a run. He also didn't have confidence that his quarterback was going to be able to throw a pass to get 3 yards too.
He wasn't happy with his running backs. He said many times he's like, you know, we didn't talk about the offensive line, but they're pad level. Like, they need to run through contact. They weren't doing that enough on Sunday, which I thought was an interesting comment as well.
He laid bare. He put it right on the players.
He put it
yesterday.
On everyone, which is fantastic because at the end of the day, you know, I liked what Luke Getsy was doing.
Truth.
I liked the different things I was seeing in terms of the different running games.
Correct.
You saw Gardner Minshew not on the same page with his running backs on a few plays. You saw the offensive line, as I talked about, looking at the tape, just completely
whiffing.
They got
their butt kicked.
Completely whiffing.
Yeah.
And the running back's just making poor decisions. So it all adds up to a bad result. We're talking about how much Antonio Pierce relied on his defense. The defense played well until they didn't. Christian Wilkins met with the media on a Monday.
That's what he's going to do.
How about that?
We're going to get interesting.
We're going to get some superstar
for those of
level.
Us who are traveling back on Mondays.
Christian Wilkins. Talking about Sunday, the effort, and the defense.
I mean, obviously, you know, you work so hard throughout the offseason and you work so hard in training camp and, you know, try to build, you know, the right stuff to produce wins, you know. But something else we do talk about is here is the process over the result. Obviously, you know, you want to win. You expect to win every game or else, you know, there's no point of going out there. So, you know, but, yeah, you know, once you look at the tape, you know, and once you, you know, take a step back from it all, you can, you know, start to process those things a little bit. But, because, you know, even sometimes when you win, you don't play great. You don't play perfect. Obviously, it's what you want, you know, win and loss columns. But there are things to find, you know, there are positives, you know, or lessons to learn from win, loss, or draw. So
that was Raiders defensive tackle Christian Wilkins. And this is going to be fascinating with him speaking on Mondays now, because normally we don't get to talk to the players. Once post-game locker room session ends, we don't get to talk to the players in a true media form until Wednesday. And so by Wednesday, I mean, you're a few days removed now. Mm-hmm. You've been able to reset. All your focus is on the next week. Mondays with Christian Wilkins are going to be kind of interesting because they're still going to be fairly fresh thoughts and what you've seen and how you're feeling. And what did you gather from what you heard of Christian.
Well, I wasn't there, so I didn't, and I didn't hear it. I think I was flying when he was talking. So it is a little. This is from what I understand what he did in Miami. But you're right, from a reporter's perspective, you're still going to be dwelling on what happened on Sunday. Usually by the time we talk to, you know, whether it's Devontae or whoever, the quarterback, Gardner Minshew, on Wednesday, you've moved on from the Sunday previously. You're talking about now the Ravens. You're talking about Baltimore. You're talking about, you know, what do you got to do to figure it out to make sure you get to 1-1, whereas yesterday I would imagine I haven't heard it, so I don't know exactly what the questions were asked, but it felt like more of a rehash of what happened on Sunday.
Yeah, it just felt like, I mean, we've come to know Christian Wilkins as this kind of light, fun guy when he's with the media. It was definitely still hitting him, and I know a lot of athletes, regardless of sport, the NFL, hockey, they have a midnight rule. Once midnight hits of that game, time to wipe the slates clean. Whatever happened, good or bad, no feeling sorry for yourselves, no more praising yourselves, just kind of move on. I don't want to put words in his mouth, but just based on, you know, body language, you know, it's still, that was a tough game. That was a physical game. And a lot of energy, as we keep talking about, was put into week one. When you come up on the wrong side of it, it's tough. And you can't help but take stock in, man, where are we right now? Because it was the off season, we had all these hopes and things, and you come out of the gate and get punched in the teeth, it's a tough one to swallow, right?
I think
right?
Where the hope is that there are correctable mistakes. You know, Gardner, you got to just eat that. You didn't have the ball in your hand. Don't try to force it. Take the, it's first down. Live for another two or three downs.
With three timeouts.
Right.
Near midfield.
Yeah. Live for another day right there rather than, you know, force the issue. The two big runs, they're going to clearly see on tape, and I know they already did by the time they got back. You're going to clearly see what happened on those two long runs. It wasn't a talent issue. It was an execution issue. So,
and that's a quick thing to look on tape. And again, we've talked about that a lot, the run fits, right? I mean, it's a matter of you were in the wrong spot.
Right.
You know, that just – that's an –
Max was talking to Devine about it on the touchdown run. They weren't having a happy conversation
right.
whatsoever.
Yeah, Devine basically ran the wrong side of Max.
Right.
Max
like,
took one
doing?
Round and he – that's a simple – it's a simple miscommunication that leads to a giant
yes.
result. And those are the things that as we look forward and we have to assume those are going to be fixed.
Yeah.
We have to assume corrected.
Because they're fixable.
That won't happen again because they're so fixable, because it's so obvious and it's – just a quick one.
Yeah.
It's the other stuff. It's the compounding of bad play after bad play. So, you know, you look at the Michael Mayer issue, right? Or not the issue, but the holding that was probably a phantom hold, but called for a hold. Regardless, the next play is Zamir White
right.
has to be concentrated enough and focused enough to, okay, I can break another run, but I can't do it at the cost of holding the loaf
right.
of bread. Right? I mean, those are the little things that the coaches are probably talking about or already have talked about on Monday, even on the plane maybe, you know, as they are chatting. But you look at them, correctable mistakes, but again, building blocks to look at when it was a 7-3 game before that
yeah.
Gardner Minshew fumble. It was a 2-point game at the end of the third quarter, and you had already turned the ball over two times. Like, you're not far off. If you're the Raiders, Brock Bowers didn't see his first ball till late in the first, third drive, I believe it was. And
there was a flurry of throws to the tight ends, which I tweeted. It might be time to get the tight ends involved.
The Bowers production gives me a little hope. That's a building block where you could say, all right,
yeah.
we're not bad for a debut. Let's see what more could be done, because I also felt like there could have been some more plays, you know, left on the field for him, getting wide open.
Brock
towards
was
the end,
pissed.
Getting towards the end zone.
After the game, Brock was pissed. He was asked about the big 26-yard gain, his longest, that play-action rollout where he did the post-corner or a little wiggle at the top of his route. And he goes, I left some yards out there.
Yeah.
I could have tight-roped. I could have taken a better angle. Like, little
when was
things
the last
like
time
that?
You think he was 0-1? You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Right, never.
Yeah. By the way, you know, you're talking about the midnight rule. It's also the 24-hour rule, they call it.
Yeah.
I had to explain that one time to Don Mattingly. I go, you know, Andy,
what it was?
I go, you know, the whole 24-hour. He's like, what? It was during a media scrum. He's like, what are you talking about, 24-hour rule? So I explained it to him. He's like, I like that. I'm gonna have to use that on my team. I'm like, I'm pretty sure they know what your players know what the 24-hour rule is. Like,
see, it's funny. In football, I always heard 24-hour rule.
Yeah.
In hockey, Jonathan Marchessault always told me it was midnight.
Yeah.
And obviously their schedules and the amount of games they might be playing.
You're probably playing the next day.
But Marchessault would always tell me, he goes, Vince, like, you know, it would be at the end of a game at T-Mobile, it's probably 10:15, 10:30. He goes, I got about an hour and a half.
Right.
And I go, to what? And he goes, yeah. And this would
to
be after
this.
A good game or a bad game. And I go, well, how difficult is that? Because, you know, you go home, it takes you a while probably to come down from playing a game. And then the next morning, he's like, you just have to. You have to find whatever it is. He goes, I watch something stupid on TV to kind of get it out of my mind, fall asleep, wake up. And it's a new game plan for a new day. So that's why.
Imagine being in baseball.
Oh, my goodness.
The only way you know who won or lost when you go into a clubhouse is whether there's music on or not.
Right.
There's a music rule in baseball. Like, you get to play, and it's usually the starting pitcher gets to pick it. The post game, you feel like you're in the club sometimes. It's so loud. But you get to listen. You get to put the music on after you win. After you lose, there's no music. So the only way we know who won or lost, even though we already know, is that. Because the reactions, the players, how they're going about it, they've already moved on, whether they won or lost. And mentally, you could tell just by you know, seeing them interact with each other and get dressed and get out of there. It's they've moved on.
And isn't it funny how when you walk in the locker room following a win, you can always tell who was in charge of the music. Like with the Golden Knights during their Stanley Cup run, you always knew William Karlsson was in charge when ABBA was being played.
There you go.
Dancing
exactly.
Queen.
Yeah.
Always.
Yep.
It's an interesting thing, but yeah. So
there's fights with that sometimes.
100%. 100%. Oh yeah, fights.
No,
like angry, pissed off. Anyways,
you know who the leaders are of the team.
Yeah, it gets very obvious. We're not gonna. We're not gonna dive into that.
Baseball.
We are gonna dive much more into the building blocks as we continue here on the Morning Tailgate.
More Silver and Black Talk with Vince Sapienza, Clay Baker, and Vinny Bonsignor.
I give him a lot of credit. Baby, you know, his wife went to labor right before the game started. For him to stay focused like that, baby boy was born, I believe, last night. So congrats to him. But I thought he did a heck of a job. Every time he went in here, made plays, really good job also in pass protection for us. I thought, you know, this was one of those games. You go in the game thinking, you know, hey, listen, a lot of Zamir White and then Alex Mattison make some plays. And as we go throughout the week, we'll look at that more and more.
Raiders head coach Antonio Pierce talking about running back Alexander Mattison. How about that, boys? You're getting set to go into a game in front of friends and family. The pride of San Bernardino, Alexander Mattison.
Probably got a lot of friends and family in the stands.
A lot of them.
Yeah.
Highlight of the game. Highlight of the season, frankly, for the Raiders so far. That 31-yard touchdown catch jumping over a Chargers defensive back. All the while, he knows his wife is about to go in labor or just went in labor.
Mm-hmm.
Have that game. Dad power. Dad strength right there. I mean... We knew there was something special with that jump, but now we know what lifted him. It was the dad strength.
Hey, the acuity of NFL players is amazing. Their focus, when they got outside stuff, their noise, it gets shut out, man. There's an absolute wall there. And Mattison rose to the occasion. And that was an interesting play, too, because Minshew had the awareness to hit him on the flat. But he noticed that there was what was available to him to the left wasn't there. And you had a split second, a moment of awareness that he was able to get that pass off.
And what's funny about that play is I marked that exact play as one that I thought Gardner was impatient about not letting Devontae come open.
Right.
Because the Chargers were playing zone and Devontae was coming across and there was a window in the middle of the field, but he quickly went off it, dumped it off to Mattison, turned out great, obviously.
Right.
But that was one I kind of looked at and I'm like, well, Devontae was open. Devontae probably, if that doesn't go for a touchdown, is probably like having a conversation in the huddle. But obviously it goes for a touchdown. I think it leads to a larger question because Antonio Pierce was asked, is this going to be a case where, you know, you go with the hot hand? And he goes, absolutely. We can't afford to not go with the hot hand. And real quick, Vinny, before you go, when you look at the snap breakdown of the 60 offensive plays, Alexander Mattison getting 36 to Zamir White's 23. Now, a lot of that is product of the Raiders needed to get the offense moving. Zamir White and the running game was not moving, and Alexander Mattison is much more of a pass-catching threat than Zamir is at this point in his career.
He's also running better.
And Luke Getsy has been known in his past with Chicago. He'll go with one running back for a pair of drives. He'll switch up the running back another drive. That drive with Alexander Mattison happened to be the third drive. So he was getting most of the
after,
snaps. After Zamir White on the first two
had
drives.
Had gotten stuffed.
Had gotten stuffed, yes. But
right.
Luke Getsy does have a pattern of switching up running backs. But I also do think it was a product of talk about pad level, not running through guys, trying to switch it up.
Which goes back to what, you know, we were having a conversation of would Antonio Pierce go for it again on fourth down? And my thing is he feels like a coach that's going to go with the flow of the game. And a lot of his decisions are going to be based on what's been happening up till that point. And, you know, we talked about, wow, you know, have your team's back and create some confidence by going for it on fourth down. But I also think that's a two-way street. You got to give him confidence to make that call. And when we go back to the decision to play Mattison more than Zamir, what was it really the byproduct of?
It was
Zamir
performance.
White wasn't getting the job done.
Yeah, it was performance.
And
Alexander, and he looked good.
Yeah, right. You give a chance to Mattison, and all of a sudden he is. So you know, it's you for him to have confidence, you have to be performing to give him that confidence, and vice versa. He's going to have your back. 24/7, and not that he doesn't have Zamir White's back, but in that game, when it wasn't working with Zamir early on, they go to Alexander Mattison, and it started working a little bit better, even not just as a pass catcher, but as a runner. It felt like he was the rhythm was there a little bit more with him.
He was running the way you would expect Zamir to kind of run,
right?
And it was,
so who
it was
did
between
he stick
the tackles,
with?
Yeah.
He stuck, and it was a while before Zamir White came back on the field. So this is a like I said, kind of a two-way process here. If you want Antonio Pierce to have the confidence in you to do certain things, you got to be doing those certain things.
No panic, obviously, but I think Zamir was trending on Sunday because fantasy guys were losing their mind when they were looking at the snap count and that Alexander Mattison was taking over. And then obviously
that
he gets the fumble.
World.
That's a different world. That's a different show. So we're not going to get into the fantasy world.
I got a lot of texts. Should I?
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I'm like, oh boy.
Same here. But are we worried about Zamir White? Because, you know, when you hear Antonio Pierce on Monday talk about pad level, talk about, you know, this isn't just on the offensive line, despite the issues that we did see on that line. You know, he called out the running backs, and when you're calling out running backs, there was only two running backs that played in that game. Mm-hmm. One was Zamir White, the other was Alexander Mattison, and Alexander Mattison had a really good performance. So, I mean, when you're talking about running backs need to do more, I mean, he's talking to Zamir White, right?
Right.
So when you look at that, I'm not worried in terms of Zamir White because I really liked what I saw in those final four games.
Mm-hmm.
Week one's a weird game. Just in general, no matter what, that's not necessarily an excuse, but I guess I am giving him
an
out.
It's also a new offensive line.
I expect to see a different type of runner, let's just say, come week two. What do you say?
I agree, but I also think we need to see a different offensive line as well.
Yeah, but I'm just talking about the runner because when Antonio Pierce is talking about pad level, I mean, that is a very specific, regardless of what the line is doing.
And I completely agree. I completely agree. But the first thing out of his mouth is we got to block better. Then he's like, then the running backs, they got to do better. They got to, you know, run with better pad level and
run through some
of those tackles.
Yeah.
So I think it was one of those, both of you guys, the offensive line, the running back, just have to be better. To me, it always does start along the offensive line. You mentioned how many whiffs, and I'm not trying to exonerate Zamir because he can.
Yeah.
There's no question. With the pad level and the running through tackles.
We have seen that.
But we also have seen this offensive line function at a much higher level.
Agreed.
And they laid an egg on Sunday. And that's, again, it goes back to what things that they can't do. They can't get beat and whipped up front the way they were. I would expect both Zamir White and that offensive line to regroup and be probably pissed off right now. And don't think for a second they're not, their ears aren't ringing based on what Antonio Pierce
100%.
Has been saying. And so I would expect, or I would think anyway. I don't know if what expecting right now is
expecting
is
stuff, especially when you look at the next opponent. I mean, that's another formidable front seven.
I would say that I would be I would think that it's going to be a much more inspired effort from the entire run game operation.
I feel like we're going to say the word hope a lot.
Yeah.
Right.
I can't hope because I don't root, but
right. I don't mean us. I mean, I'm speaking as
every time I say expect, that's the thing, right? Every time we say expect, we almost catch ourselves saying, but I don't know what to expect. I really don't. I would think it's going to be a more inspired effort by the offensive line and certainly by Zamir White. And there is a track record there. And I do think getting Jackson Powers Johnson, you know, Colton Miller probably was a little bit rusty. No question about that. Missing a lot of time. So it is a long season, and offensive lines, generally speaking, especially if they could stay healthy moving forward, generally come together a little bit. And we haven't seen that offensive line fully intact. That was the first time that, you know, the left tackle was out there in a game this year. Previously, it had been Andrews Pete during the preseason. So that's just going to have to kind of be a work in progress. And it remains a work in progress because the left guard isn't out there right now.
702-365-9200. Nash from Houston texting in says, my positives, Brock B, Big Mike. Mayer made a great contested catch. Brock and Big Mike are my still third and two targets. But our offensive line isn't great, so we have to pass to run versus the other way around. And Antonio Pierce has to come to grips with we are what we are and not what he wants us to be. Thank you, Nash in Houston.
That's interesting.
They are what they are, that's for sure. And I don't know that you could talk anything into existence.
Yeah, I think the offensive line is better than they showed on Sunday. But right now, all we have on tape is what they were. So as of right now, it was a bad offensive line performance. And that goes not just for the five guys, but, you know, the tight ends that were in there as well. I mean, I saw Michael Mayer had a good game. But there were times where he got pushed back in a big way on certain run blocks, and that they're going to go back to and be like, this can't happen.
Right.
That kind of thing. I know Brock Bowers got praised for his ability in his debut catching the ball. Antonio Pierce said there was some good stuff blocking as well, but there was also some stuff that he's got to work on too.
Yeah.
And that's what you're going to get out of rookie.
So, I mean, yeah, for sure. And the NFL is such a fun, there's just so much talent too. And the other team gets paid as well. The expectation that you're going to win every rep is not realistic, right? So, you know, generally speaking, when I've talked to offensive linemen, they have this chart basically is how many times are you winning the battle versus how many times how many reps are you winning, how many reps are you losing? Mm-hmm. And if you're up above this percentage on the wins for the reps, you're helping us win. If you fall below that percentage, you're probably contributing to us losing. So you're not going to pitch a shutout. You know, I talked about Joe Alt yesterday, who had a fabulous game and really did well. That guy's going to be a beast and a problem for years to come. But there was also a rep where Christian Wilkins just threw him around like a rag dog, which was an incredible play by Christian Wilkins.
When's the last time that's happened to Joe Alt?
Right, exactly. But to prove the point that you're in the NFL, there's out of 70 snaps or so that you're going to get, there's probably a couple that you're going to get. You're going to look silly.
Yeah.
You know, Colton Miller got just kind of pushed around a little bit.
He got driven back.
Yeah, that first Khalil Mack sack, he's not going to like what he sees on tape. You know what else I was You know what else I thought was interesting was we were joking about in the offseason about 14 personnel. How many times are they going to run 13 personnel? Yeah. Four times.
Four times
four
under 13.
Four times out of 60 plays, which was interesting to me. But 12 personnel was not as high as I think a lot of people thought. I have that number here somewhere.
I counted it quite a bit, but I don't know what I don't know exactly, you know, how many times it was in.
15 of the 60 snaps, it was Bowers and Mayer.
Right.
So that's 12 personnel, two tight end sets. I'll speak for me. I thought it was going to be much higher, a much higher percentage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess I would have to go back to really look at each one, the situation, and what they were trying to accomplish. But I would expect the number to go up because those are two of your top weapons, and more often than not, you want those guys on the field.
I saw Mayer coming off the field a lot on third downs, on the passing third down situations. That's how they sub that out. Trey Tucker would come in.
So obviously, if the run game is going, 12 personnel, that percentage is going to go through the roof because the number of play action and just different things you're accomplishing – it's a much different
felt like if they offense. Were if there was going to be problems in pass coverage, maybe you see more of Harrison Bryan out there in those larger jumbo packages.
And I think that if you're Vince makes an excellent point, which I think when you are successfully running the ball out of 12 personnel, then you could do so many other things out of 12 personnel, and they never got a chance to give themselves a chance to create rhythm, to get the defense back on their heels, and then to go into their other sub playbook off of the 12 personnel. They just were never able to establish an identity out of 12 personnel running it. So therefore, they put themselves into too many third and longs. And at that point, you're going to go with the 11 personnel, three wide receivers, one tight end. In that case, it felt like they favored Brock Bowers over Michael Mayer in that personnel grouping. So you need to see them have some success running the ball first and foremost out of that 12 personnel, and then the passing part of it will follow.
Clay, what was that number you had on the third and shorts?
That's pretty bad. Four out of 13.
Four out of 13
in short yardage situations.
So four out of 13. So when you look at that's 13.
What do we consider short yardage? Just out of
second
curiosity.
And short, third and short.
Like. What's the down?
Second and three, third and three, or less.
Three or less. So when you look at that.
How many times did they throw out of that?
13.
The four conversions were all passes.
They were all passing. So of the 13 third and shorts or fourth and shorts, what does that tell me? That tells me you're doing exactly what you hoped on the early downs. You're doing the hardest part.
Yeah, it's not second and long and third and long.
You're doing the hardest part in terms of 13 opportunities of short to go on third or fourth down. That's a good sign. We're talking building blocks today. We're getting back to the positive meter.
They were on schedule.
They were. For me, that first drive is a microcosm of the entire game because you have Jacoby Myers on that motion little out, gets 8 yards. Boom! You are on schedule.
Second and two.
Even ahead of schedule, some would say.
Or was that, second and two.
It would have been second and two. You get stuffed. I mean, tough stuff. And to your point, regardless of how you think Luke Getsy fared, right, Sunday, because everyone was kind of asking, well, what's Luke Getsy's offense going to look like here in Vegas, I would argue he wasn't even able to open one or two chapters of his offensive playbook because – what did I say? 15 out of 60 snaps of 12 personnel. The run game wasn't going, so he wasn't able to really open
play
up.
Off of it. Right?
Wasn't able to do anything.
Yeah.
I mean, half his playbook is probably off 12 personnel play action.
Right? Yeah.
Right? Like just different schematics, different lines, the way they're lined up. He probably wasn't getting to any of it. 10% maybe.
Mm-hmm. That's going to be something to watch this week against the Ravens. If the run game isn't working, then what? What is the adjustment?
Because it's going to be more of the same.
Because you can't get into a hole,
which is not good
with the Ravens the way they have scored, and they have beat great teams before, great offenses. Last year they smoked the Lions early, and the Lions had no answer to come back. Yeah. What now for this week?
And you talk about a team that's going to stick to their identity, like similar to the Chargers, they're going to continue to run the ball even when it wasn't going well for them. They're just going to keep doing it.
The Ravens aren't
going to stop either.
They went on the road and were within a play of potentially beating the Chiefs because they would have gone for two right there. So, tough loss for them. But, what was it, 50-50 that they were going to win that game? Anyway, they kept it close. It was, one of those big nights in Kansas City. So now they're thinking we're going to come home playing a vulnerable opponent. We're pissed off. So it's going to be a hornet's nest that the Raiders are going into in Baltimore, flat out.
More to come up next. We'll talk about our final sit-down. But join us on Thursday night for Raider Nation Radio's home on TNF. Big game, Bills, Dolphins. I'll be at Chickies and Pete's, Sahara, Las Vegas. Always free parking at the Sahara. Come and say hello. I'm there from 5 to 8. Got the food and drink specials. Awesome atmosphere. The pastrami burger and crab fries is the burger of the month. And I'll have Raider Nation Radio shirts and swag. It's Thursday Night Football over at Chickies and Pete's inside the Sahara. And I also have prizes. Call the number now. We'll clear the line. 702-365-9200. Two tickets for the Trans-Siberian Orchestra, the Lost Christmas Eve Tour. Friday, November 29th at the Orleans Arena. You know, the ticket's not even on sale yet. So that's why it's so special that you listen now. You got two right here. 702-365-9200. It's Raider Nation.
It's the sit-down. A staple on the morning tailgate as the coals are starting to flame out here on the barbecue and the drinks are starting to warm up.
Just
the ice is melting.
Yeah, glowing embers is what's left.
All good things come to an end. This was a good show. This was a good show, gang. We had some decibels were raised. We had some impressions. We had the power of positivity from Jason Fitz.
The 7 and 8, Jason Fitz. Keeping it real.
Right? I know we have a great show lined up tomorrow, Clay. It's always a good show on Wednesdays.
Yeah, and Raiders are hosting former first rounder from the Jags in 2020, Kalyvon Chason, edge rusher, somebody that could provide some depth. We'll see what happens. They're hosting a visit. That's what they do on these off days.
Antonio Pierce said Tom Telesco was on the case, figuring out that D-line. Little thin, Vinny. Little thin.
And getting thinner by the day. We know that obviously Malcolm Kuntz is down for a prolonged period of time. Don't know what the status is right now of Tyree Wilson. He left Sunday's game with a knee injury.
And it's so frustrating. Again, not to speculate, but where it happened, it looks like it came on that Max Crosby sack where he did a great job. Came off the edge. Mm-hmm. He was unblocked. He left his he probably didn't have to because he's a massive human being. But, you know, he leaves his feet. Herbert pump fakes, keeps it. Max gets the sack, but looks like he came down a little awkward on that left leg.
Right, exactly.
Left knee.
So we'll see. You wouldn't expect them to be, you know, I know fans get, you know, they need to get this guy or get, there's not anybody really that's out there right now. So you're going to have to make do with who you bring in. At least he's a young 25-year-old. Right.
Yeah, he's still got a lot of years left, but we'll see what kind of work he gets in because his snap counts, even in his youth, have been rather paltry. All right, go up online, lvsportsnetwork.com for our podcast page. Download the LV Sports Network app for streaming and for podcasts as well here on Raider Nation Radio. For Vince, for Vinny, I'm Clay. Coming up next, it's Rich Eisen here on Raider Nation Radio. Then JT the Brick from 12 to 2, Q Myers from 2 to 5 here on R&R 920. Have a great day, everybody.